And we're holding on page Kuf Aleph in Bava Basra, or is Kuf Tes Zayin. Continuing on the topic of one of the topics discussed in this parak is various cases where a person gives gifts of his nechassim and details about that. So the Mishnah says, ha'omer, if a person says his wife is pregnant and he says, "Miyolda ishti zacher," if my wife gives birth to a boy, yitol mona, then he should get a mona, 100 zuz of my nechassim. Yolda Zahar, so if she gives birth to a boy, Yitol Mana, then he does get that Mana. Nekeva, and if she gives birth to a Nekeva Masayim, and if he says that if it's a girl, she should get 200 Zuz, Yolda Nekeva, Netalis Masayim, then if she gives birth to a girl, then she gets 200. There is a certain Siddush in it, because the Gemara discusses, we'll have a little bit about it, in Ein Yaakov, the question of, given that the baby hasn't been born yet, are you able to be Mezakah to them? Or is it considered Dabar Shalai Bala Olam? This actually ties in with something in today's Shloisha Parakim of Rambam, where the Rambam discusses it, because the Rambam brings a case from the Sefer Kiddushin, where one man says to another that if your wife gives birth to a girl, then I'm Makadish her to my son. As of now, does that work or does it not work? There's similar points to hear of whether an unborn baby is considered to be a Matzias yet. Anyway, so the Gemara takes up that point, but also then the Mishnah goes on to discuss various other cases. What if she has twins? What if she has a tumtum or an androgynous, etc.? So you have the various scenarios. So, but the Gemara focuses on, the part in Ein Yaakov anyway, focuses on, lememer de bas adifa le miben. So it seems from the way the Mishnah gives the case that a father would rather have a daughter rather than a son. Because we're saying that if he has a son, if his wife gives birth to a boy, then he wants him to get 100 zuz. And if it's a girl, he wants to get 200. So it sounds like he'd prefer to have a girl, and therefore, in joy for that, he wants to give her a larger present. The question is, what we learned in the previous parak, that Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, kol misha ena maniach ben liyoshoi, when a man doesn't leave over a son to yarshin him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mole olav evra, then Hashem is full of anger on him. We learned about this a couple of weeks back, various angles on it, to some extent, as some Mephoshim say, that it may not mean physical sons, it may mean that he has, after all, tamidim are like a person's sons also, it can mean that he has biological sons, but they're not of the caliber to yarshin him, etc. But at least on the simple level, it means, in other words, if he pasha doesn't have a son, then Hashem, and he's not trying to do pruvu, then Hashem is upset with him. Shenemar, as we find the pasuk describes when it talks about a girl yarshining, v'havartim es nachlosa b'vitoi, you should cause his nachla to pass to his daughter. So in the simple sense, the Gemara explains in the previous parak, it uses the word v'havartem in the sense that that's the only way in which the Yerusha can conceivably end up going to a different shevet, if she marries a man from a different shevet, and then her husband or her children will eventually yarshin her. But here the Reb Shimon Yochai also says, v'ein ha'avara ela evra. This word ha'avara, that you'll cause the nachla to pass, also is Moloshin Evra anger. Shenema Yoim Evra Hayoimahu, as the pasuk describes Gehenim, that day is a day of anger. So we see, in other words, that when a man doesn't have a son, then Hashem is upset with him. Hashem is angry with him. So that being the case, why would we assume that he would rather have a daughter than a son? At least if he has a son, then he knows he's potter from that Evra of Hashem. And the answer is in Yerusha, Ben Odifle. Sure, as far as Yarshining, he would prefer to have a son, because Rashbam points out to Balabatish, because then that way his son, after all, is from the same Shevet as him. His daughter may well marry a man from a different Shevet, and then the Nachla is going to wind up going to a different Shevet, and it'll be forgotten that it ever belonged to him. So therefore, from that point of view, sure, he'd rather have a son. Le'inin havocha, but when it comes to giving, when it comes to giving money to help support her, bite adifale, he would prefer to give to a daughter, because after all, a daughter is not usually going to be self-supporting. Usually she's going to depend on her husband to support her, or even if it happens, like we learned yesterday, you can have a case where sons may have to go begging door to door to earn money. Women don't usually do that. It's a bazillion for them. So therefore, a man may well figure, it's more important for me to provide a larger amount for my yet-to-be-born daughter than for my son, because looking ahead, that she's going to be less self-supporting. So that's one reason. So that's one reason why the Mishnah would be talking about that he gives 200 to the daughter. Ushmula, Mashmul gives a different answer. We're not stem talking about that she's pregnant for whatever number of time and she's going to have a daughter or a son. We're talking about where his wife is going to have her first child, or his first child, rather. The Chidur of Chista. So then he would prefer a girl first, like the way Rav Chista says. The Omer of Chista, Vas Batchila, Simon Yofel Abonim. Having a daughter first is a good simon for sons. Why is that? One explanation is because she helps raise her younger brothers. So further, biologically, girls mature faster than boys, which is why a girl's bat mitzvah is a year. If we don't want to admit it to ourselves, I'm sure our wives will testify to that. So therefore, if they have a girl first, then she'll be more of a mother's helper. So that's one reason why it's better. The Ikadamri, others say another reason, Dele Shalter Behur, Be Ein Abisha, he's less likely to be subject to an Ein Hara, because, if he has boys, if eventually he has a lot of boys, then people will be more likely to have to accidentally or on purpose give him an Ein Hara, whereas if he has a girl first, then they're less likely to. Mamshar points out another point as well. It also has to do with the Bechora. As we learned previously, a Bechora gets a double portion. So if there's a firstborn boy, then there's more likely to be friction later on among the Yoshin. Granted, okay, they're going to know, look, this is the halacha, a Bechora gets a double portion. Nevertheless, they may resent him for it, just because you got born first, therefore you get a double portion. There is, by the way, a popular Gleich Vertel, they say on it, why it is that the Torah grants a double portion to the Bechora, is because basically the parents are practicing on him first. He's the one who gets the brunt of the parents' inexperience. So therefore, it's only right that he should get something extra for it later. But anyway, the point can still, as Marsha points out, there can still be a certain amount of friction. But when there's a girl first, none of the boys are b'chor then. All of them are giving an equal portion. So that's another meaning of the l'shalt be'ein abisha, not that other people won't give the father an ayin hara. There won't be an ayin hara among the children themselves where they won't have reason to be jealous of their elder brother because he's not getting any more than they are. That's another reason why a girl is better first. Al-Pichsidus, you have the point that a bas, we know here from this week's parasha, Isha Kisazriya, Isha Mazras, Tchila Yiladis Zohar, Isha Mazras, Isha Mazriya, Tchila Yiladis Nekeva, and in all over the place in Chsidus, it talks about that's the interplay of Isirusa de la Ela and Isirusa de la Sata. When we have the Isirusa de la Sata first, the Isha Mazras, Tchila, then it brings about a greater Hashpah Milamayla, Yiladis Zohar, and vice versa. So therefore, the idea of bas, Tchila, Simen Yofa Labonim, that when the Vas is first, the Sirus of Asata, or Avoida, Simon Yofel Abonim, and it's a better Simon, that now there'll be a greater Halos Maya, later Halos Maya Duchrin, and a greater Hashpah Milamayla, represented by sons. Omer of Chista, so Rav Chista says, Uvedidi Binsen Adifin Libibni. Rav Chista says, you know what, for me, my daughters are better than sons. Now, why is that? Rashbam says, because apparently Rav Chista's sons passed away, so he only had daughters. So he's saying that my daughters are better for me than my sons. Nevertheless, Rashbam says, it's still hard to understand why he'd say that. Anyway, he wouldn't still prefer to have more sons in the end. Anyway, Tosfos Chachal argues with Rashbam on that we find in different places in Shas, we have a number of children of Rav Chista that are mentioned in different places in Shas. Who, Rashbam?
No,
Rav Chista is making a statement. We have to figure out why. Right. So Rashbam is saying, Nida Be'enai.
Himself can give a reason.
Okay, but let's try. Let's try to.
He loves his daughters more.
Okay, so fine. But we have to figure out what's the logic. Why would he say that? So Rashbam is saying, because his son. No, but he's not saying love more. He's saying that I prefer. He's saying that normally most men would prefer to have. He's saying most men would prefer to have sons. I prefer the fact that I have daughters. So hold on. So Rashbam says a practical matter. His son's passed away. So therefore, and he's going to have future nachas is only going to be only from his daughters. But still, Rashbam really doesn't like that explanation as well. Tosfos says anyway. We find in a number of places in Shas, it's very clear that Rav Chista did have sons who grew to adulthood. And quite a few of them became distinguished Talmid Chachamim themselves. Rather, Tosfos says, because The reason is because of Rav Chisda's daughters, we know that two of them married great Talmid Chachamim. One of them married Rami Bar Chama, and later on Rami Bar Chama died or divorced her, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and then she married Rava. And the other one married Rami Bar Chama's brother, Rav Ukva Bar Chama. So therefore, so in other words, his sons grew to be great Talmid Chachamim. That's a big thing in itself. But that his daughters, on top of that, married such outstanding Talmid Chachamim, that was something special to him. Other Mephoshim point out that Rav Chisda's daughters were particularly Chachamos and Snuos. We find a Gemara in Shabbos where Rav Chisda gives them certain pieces of advice that we don't find them given to anybody else. And Ben Yehoyada points out another point as well. One reason why it might be better to have a boy is because they have a mitzvah Pidyon HaBen. But Rav Chisda, we find in a different Gemara, was a Kohen. So he's not doing Pidyon HaBen anyhow. So he's saying, for me, being a Kohen, then it's better to have girls. It's better to have girls first because I'm not forfeiting Pidyon HaBen thereby. So that's another answer over here. So you're right. If a guy has already had several children and now his wife is pregnant again, maybe not necessarily would he give a greater amount to a potential daughter than to a son. But here we're talking about where his wife is pregnant with their first child, then he may want to give more to a daughter because Bas Tchila Sin and Yafal Abanim. The boy Seima, or the Gemara says, yet another answer you could give, Hamani Rabbi Yehudahi. Our Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that there's a greater bracha in having a daughter. So the Gemara asks, hey Rabbi Yehuda, which statement of Rabbi Yehuda do we see that he holds that a daughter is better than a son? Elaim Rabbi Yehuda de Bakol, is it Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about the matter of Bakol, which we learned earlier in this Masechta a couple of months back, the Tanya, when the Pasuk says about Avraham Vashem, Berachas Avraham Bakol, Rabbi Meir Oymer Shalai Hoysalai Bas, so Rabbi Meir, as we learned over there, said that the bracha was that he didn't have a daughter. We talked about over there, why would that be a bracha? One thing is, because then who would he marry her off to? He'd have to marry her off to one of the local Goyim, and then she's going to be lost to him and his family, and a few other reasons why that would be better. Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Shalai Hoysalai Bas, the Bakol Shema. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the contrary, he had a daughter, and her name was Bakol. That's actually a combination of two different opinions that we had in the Gemara there earlier. We had Rabbi Yehuda had said the bracha was that he had a daughter, and another opinion, Acherim, I think, says that he had a daughter and her name was Bakol. So here the Gemara is kind of collapsing those two opinions together. Who was the mother of Hashem Sarah? We talked about over there, when we learned about it a couple of months back, we talked about various angles that Mephoshim talk about the different opinions over here, what this means. If we say that the bracha was, according to the mayor, that he didn't have a daughter because who would he marry off to, then on the contrary, if he had a daughter, then the bracha is that nevertheless he was able to find her, that Hashem helped him to find a good shidduch for her, where she would continue in his ways. We talked about the idea that it can represent how did he manage to gather so many people around him and be able to teach the entire world about the Eibishter. Did it help the fact that he had a daughter? Did it help the fact that he didn't? Does it, despite the fact that he didn't have a daughter, nevertheless, different ways of learning what exactly the Pasuk is mentioning. So actually, as far as you're asking who was her mother, Tosfos brings up a possibility that actually if we say that he had a daughter, then her mother may have been Hagar. And Tosfos says that could give one answer. Why didn't he marry her off to Yitzchak? It's before Matan Torah, after all. A man is allowed to marry a Ben Noach is allowed to marry a sister who shares only the same father. Avraham himself says about Sarah, bas Ovi hi achloi bas imi, and the Gemara learns in Sanhedrin from that a Ben Noach is allowed to marry his paternal sister. And in fact, you have an opinion in Sanhedrin that outright, a Ben Noach is b'chlam, and I'm allowed to marry his sister, even a full sister. So Tosfos says, one, first of all, she may have been a Ketana, and second of all, it must have been more of a Ketana than Rivka, I guess, because Rivka was only three, but anyway, the other possibility, Tosfos says, is if her mother was Hagar, then he didn't want to marry her off to Yitzchak. The point is, so then you see from that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that he considers it a bracha that Avraham had a daughter. Actually, Iyun Yaakov points out that, yeah, it is true that Rivka herself was only three. The fact is, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, it was in yesterday's Amam Shlosha Prokim, that even though a father has the right to be Makadish's daughter, he's not supposed to until she's old enough to choose for herself. So Basuel evidently didn't care, and therefore he could marry off Rivka when she was three. Avraham didn't want to do that, so therefore he would have had to wait until his daughter was old enough for that. What? No, well, the sword was dead by the time they said Nishalos says Fia, right? But yeah, when Eliezer gave the when Eliezer gave the McDonald's and all that, in effect, that's the Kiddushin. Mm-hmm. Actually, even before, really, when he gave the Nezim Zahav and all that jewelry, that was in effect the Kiddushin. So now, fine, they had to wait until her father consented. But he says, "I'm Hashem Yotzah Dover." He knew Rivka Lefanacha Kafalei. Fine. The next morning, her father and her brother were trying to stall for time, but by that time, it's Lacha Maisa already. By the way, you know, there's a popular vote in that connection. I don't remember the mocker of it that says, you know, when we say in the Haggadah, Rami Oved Ovi, Love and Bikish Lakar Sakol, where do we find he was trying Lakar Sakol? He was a no good nick and all that, but where's Lakar Sakol? So one interesting explanation is based on that whole story over there. Yitzchak had been, Rivka had already been Niskadish to Yitzchak. Now we know that Besuel, and apparently Lovan as well, tried to poison Eliezer. What happened if they would have succeeded? Rivka would be stuck over there. She wouldn't have anybody to go back with. Yitzchak wouldn't know to look for her because he'd have no idea where to go. And the result would be actually Balal. He wouldn't be allowed to marry anybody because any woman that he finds might conceivably be a mother or sister or whatever of his Mekudeshes. Wow. So literally the whole thing, the whole Jewish people would have ended before it even began. And yeah, that's what all I meant. Okay. Anyway, the point is that we see that Rabbi Horta considers it that there was bracha, Hashem berachas Avraham Bakol, that he had a daughter. But the Gemara says still, Emur deshamat leil Rabbi Horta de brata nami lechaser rachman al Avraham. Fine. We see that Rabbi Horta is saying that Hashem did not deny Avraham the bracha of a daughter. But where do you see that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a daughter would be better than a son? Ad kedekach, that we'd be saying in our Mishnah that he'd be willing to give his unborn daughter, his yet-to-be-born daughter, twice as much as he would to a son. So no, Elohor Rabbi Yehuda. Rather, it's the following statement of Rabbi Yehuda. D'tanya, mitzvah lozunas abonos, it's a mitzvah for a man to support his daughter, as the Gemara mentions in Ksubas, that an Iker Adin, a father, is required to support his children only until they're 6 years old. After that, let him go out and get a job. This is, you know, long before child labor laws. So nevertheless, the Gemara says in Ksubas that if a man doesn't want to support his children, then we shame him publicly and we put social pressure on him to support him. See, he was saying there's a mitzvah for him to support his daughters until they get married. But Kavachoyma Labonin, how much more so that he should support his sons to ask you about Torah, because sons are studying Torah. Divrei Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says. So Reb Meir considers the sons to be in a better position than the daughters. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Mitzvah lozunas abonim, it's a mitzvah for him to support his sons until they're of age, to support themselves, the kavachim of the bonus, and how much more so for the daughters, the lelitzalon, so they don't have to be publicly humiliated by having to go and beg or get a job outside the house or whatever, which would be beneath their dignity. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda considers a daughter in that sense to be better than a son, and therefore again that goes back to what we were saying before, that a man would want to provide more for his daughters than for his sons. So the Gemara then gets into a discussion now. So the premise of our Mishnah, again, is that the child has not been born yet, and the father is already able to say that I'm granting now 100 or 200, respectively, whether it's a boy or a girl. The question is, how does that work? Isn't the child Dover Shaloi Balarlam? So the Gemara gets into a whole discussion about it. Would that in fact work? Can a person be Mazaka to an unborn child? The Gemara ends up making a distinction for one thing. Is it his own unborn child or somebody else's? If it's his own, then already he has a certain kiruv hadas to this unborn baby because it's his. If it's somebody else's unborn baby, you don't have that. The Gemara furthermore distinguishes whether the baby's even been conceived yet, if it hasn't been conceived yet. And you're going to say in the future, if my wife conceives and has a boy, then he should get X amount. That for sure is not going to work. And the Gemara goes through a whole bunch of different details in that connection. So the Gemara tells, so the Gemara ends up saying, Vehilchasa, the bottom line, halacha hamazakala uber lekona. If a person is mezaka to an unborn baby, then he's not koine. Because he's a dover shalai below them, basically. So the Gemara tells in this connection a story. Hahuta amal dvesu, a man says to his wife, and this was his second wife, nechosei lebonai diyehevi li minoch. My nechosim will go to the children that I'll have with you. So in other words, maybe he's trying to be meshadech her, and he's trying to convince her that he has money, and therefore that her children stand to Yarshin. Maybe they're already married, and he wants to make her feel good. Whatever it is, Also break Shisha. Well, the guy already had an older son from his first marriage. So the son comes and complains to his father, Ahu Gabra Matevi Ale. What's gonna be with that man, meaning me? Are you gonna disinherit me? And we learned in the previous parak, you're not supposed to disinherit a son anyway. We said that Masha also, if he did it, it's done, but you're not supposed to. But now, the older son from the first marriage, what's going to be with me? Amalei, so the father tells him, don't you worry. Zilkoni kechad mi bara. Fine, go ahead and you'll be koina from the nechosim, an amount equal to the other children. To the children that I'll have with my new wife, with your stepmother. Well, we have to figure, Hanach Vade Lekonu. Now, there's no question that those unborn children are not Koina, we just said, because you can't be Mazaka to an unborn baby, Dakati Lesnehu, because they don't exist yet. Now the question is, as far as this son, this son who already exists, what exactly is he Yarshining? Is Cholak Latalia B'mkoim Vanaya? Is there a Chelak for this young man in the place of the children? Or is there not? Rashbam explains, in other words, the vote would be like this. If you say there is, then it would mean as follows. Let's say eventually this guy ends up having three children with his second wife. And then he has this one son, and then he has three sons with a second wife, and then he has one son from his first wife. So maybe what we should say is that, those children are not going to be those yet to be born children. When they're born, when they're already born, by the time the father dies, then they will each be getting a portion, but as Yerusha, not as Matana. So therefore, maybe what we should say is that this older son is going to get a quarter of the Yerusha by virtue of being one of the four Yerushim, and in addition, he's going to get a portion of the remainder of the Nechosim as well, because he would share in the rest of it with the other children. In other words, in effect, we would say that. So the vote is like this. Rashbam explains again. Let's say again. We have four children. What we would start by doing is first we divide the estate into four portions, and he gets one because he's one of four sons. Then we have three quarters of the estate left. Now what we would do is we'd take that three quarters and divide it again into four, and then we would say would we say. Those three are not able to get b'toras matana. They're not able to get as a matana because they weren't yet born at the time of the matana. So therefore he would get one quarter of that remaining three quarters, and then the rest of it would be divided as the Yerusha. Or would we not say that, and we would just say that he gets exactly a quarter?
So the first quarter is getting as a matana, and
The first quarter he's getting is a Yerusha. The question is whether beyond that, of the remaining three quarters, is he getting a matana within that because of the terms of what his father said, or is he just getting exactly a quarter of the nechassim, and he's getting one quarter and the other ones are getting, they're getting, they're splitting between them the three quarters, and he's not getting anything extra. So that's the question. Well, the Gemara says there was a machloikas between two sets of Amiroyim. Reb Ovin v'Reb Miyasha v'Reb Yirmiyah d'Amri. So the three Chachamim, they were elder Chachamim, as we're going to see soon, they held d'Amri. They said, Is Cholak Natalia b'mkoyim b'naya? Yes, this young man, this older child, Rashbam points out the word Talia means an older child or a teenager. He's entitled to a portion in place of the children, which would mean, in other words, that he gets a certain amount as a Yerusha, and in addition, another certain amount as a Matana. On the other hand, three younger Chachamim, Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Chanina Bapapi, Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha, Da'amni, less Cholak Natalia, B'mkoyim B'naya, he doesn't get anything extra for this. They're not Zoyche. In other words, the opinion of the older three Amiroyim is, even though those three are not Zoyche in the Matana, because they weren't yet alive at the time the Matana was given, nevertheless we treat as though they were, to the extent that he gets a portion equal to what each of them would have gotten from the point of view of Matana.
What's the reasoning?
The reasoning is because by saying, he says, go and be koina like one of the children, maybe what he means is, look, in practice, those children are not able to be koina, but you should get a portion equal to what each of them would have gotten had they been able to be zoicha in the matana. Or do we not say that? So there again, the older three Amiroyim say that he does get, and the younger three Amiroyim say that he doesn't. So he just gets one quarter of the Yerusha, and that's that. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Abahu l'Rav Yirmiyah, said Rav Abahu, who was from the younger set, asked Rav Yirmiyah from the older set, Hilchsa Kavasana, Hilchsa Kavasaihu, who was the halacha like our group, the younger Chachamim, or like you, the older Chachamim. Amalei, so Rav Yirmiyah says, Pshita de Hilchsa Kavasana. Obviously, the halacha must be like us, de Kashishna Minaihu, because we're older. The halacha can't be like you, the dardiki after him, because your youngster is relative to us. In fact, we do have a rule in halacha. We usually say that up until the time of Abaya and Rava, and these chachamim lived approximately in that period, until that time, we usually say the halacha is like the Rebbe over the Talmud. Beginning from the time of Abaya and Rava and on, we start saying the concept of hilchsa kabasroi. The halacha is usually is often like the later chachamim. The reason behind it is because Abaya and Rava, it's explained, Abaya and Rava were the first we talked about yesterday, Abaya and Rava, all the questions and answers and discussion of the Gemara that they all did that forms the backbone of the Gemara, they were the first ones to really put a lot of serious effort into that, to gathering together all the opinions of the Chachamim before them and start assembling what eventually became the Gemara. And therefore, like in other words, up to that point, we could say, let's say, for example, an Amora argues with the previous Amora. Maybe he didn't know what the previous Amora said. Maybe if he knew what he said, he would have changed his mind. But beginning from the time of Abaya and Rava and on, we can say, yes, they knew very well what the earlier Amora said, and they're still arguing with it. In any case, so now, Rabbi Yudin is saying, we're the older ones, therefore the halacha necessarily has to be like us. Omalei, but Rabbi Bahu says, midi b'tishus Italia milsa. Since when does it depend just on age? The time of Italia milsa, the matter depends on reasoning, and there is a logical reasoning for what we're saying. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, okay, the time am I. So what's the reason? So Taka, what's the reason for your svara that he doesn't get an extra portion and he just gets an amount of nachla equal to the other children? So Rabbi Bahu tells him, Zil gabed Rab Ovin, go talk to Rab Ovin, das barta niale. I explained it to him. So even though Rab Ovin was from the first set, from the older Chachamim, Rabbi Bahu was saying, I went and explained our svara of us younger Chachamim to him, the Kaukish Bei Reisha Bei Medrasha, and he nodded his head in the Meis Medrash, meaning that he accepted my svara. So now, if you talk to him, and he was from your group, together with Rabbi Yasha and you, if you talk to him, then he'll be able to explain to you why in fact, our Svara is a valid one, and therefore that the halacha should be like us.
Okay. Yeah. Is this a rule that...
A Tana wins, right. We're talking about within one period. Now we're talking about, within one period. Yeah.
That's the point.
Up until the time of Abaya and Rava, generally that's the rule. It's not always, but generally speaking, up to Abaya and Rava, that is usually the rule. From Abaya and Rava and on, the usual rule is within one period, usually you say halacha kabasroi, that the halacha is like the later chachamim. Again, because the later chachamim from that point on knew specifically what the older chachamim had said and consciously disagreed with it. The Gemara doesn't always pass in the halacha anyway. It's actually not very common that the Gemara will conclude the hilchsa, the halacha is like such and such. We have certain rules that the Gaonim and the Rishonim use to derive who the halacha is like, and sometimes those rules don't even work, and they have to use their own svara, they have to use their own Torah de Kesvara to decide who the halacha is like. You look in the Rambam, for example, you'll find many times the Noisa Kalim struggle with why the Rambam paskin like a certain way. Is it sometimes it'll be because of those rules? Let's say we know, for example, that we have a Baya against Rava most of the time, the halacha is like Rava. Or when we have Rabba against Rabbi Yosef most of the time the halacha is like Rabba, etc. So sometimes we can use those rules. Sometimes it'll just be, for example, because sometimes the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam, let's say we'll explain, because the Gemara takes its time discussing a certain opinion and discusses it and its corollaries and everything at great length, that indicates alone that the halacha must be like it. So there's all kinds of shikul adas involved like that. Ultimately, this is why Torah Shebaal Peh was originally Baal Peh, and even now that it's in Sfarim, we still need Rebbeim to learn from, because not everything can be reduced to rules, and not everything can be AI. Let's put it that way, yeah. The Gemara goes on to discuss, there was a case where a man said, I want my nechosim to go to my sons. Now, he had a son and a daughter, the Gemara says. So the question is, when he has only one son, when he says sons in plural, does he mean his children, so therefore it would include that his daughter should get a portion as well, or is he using the word sons maybe to mean only one son? So one of the proofs, the Gemara says, is of Bnei Dan Choshin. As it says, the sons of Dan were Choshin. So we see that the word Bnei can be used of only one son. In fact, the Gemara actually brings a couple of other psukim where we see the same kind of thing. You have a number of psukim in Divrei Yomim that follow the same pattern as well, where the Gemara will say, Vnei, the sons of Pliny, are, and it mentions one son. The Malbim has an interesting idea about it. He says, the vort is that Ezra and Nehemiah, who composed Divrei Yomim, were taking their information from the Sefer Yuchsin. They had collections of books of Yuchsin from the different families and Shvatim of the Jewish people. Sometimes you would have a man had several sons, and for whatever reason, Ezra and Nehemiah decided that only one of them should be recorded in history. So the book would say, Uvnei Pliny is Pliny, Pliny, and Pliny. But they would choose to mention only the one, but they still left the word Uvnei in, because that was what it was in the source they took it from. Be that as it may, we see that there are cases where the word of Nei means only one son. So the Gemara says, Tonet Vechizkiya, we learned to brighten in the yeshiva of Chizkiya, Malamed, Choyabon of Merubim, Kechushim Shokona. This teaches us that Don's sons, the sons of this one Chushim, ended up being numerous like the Chushim of reeds. Rashbam says three chushim shokona can mean a thicket of reeds. You have a bunch of reeds grow very thickly together. It can also mean that Rashbam says it can mean the leaves or the knots on them, whatever the case. The point is you have a lot of them together the same way. The name chushim represents that from this one son came an enormous shevet. The Medrash, in fact, points out that here you have Don had only one son, Chushim, and we know famously also it's in Tamara's Daf of Sota for Svira that Chushim was deaf, and yet from him came the second largest Shevet. When you look in the censuses in Parshas Bamidbar and in Parshas Pinchas, you find they were like 64,000 and some. On the other hand, Binyamin had 10 sons, and their shevet, both in the first and the second census, was one of the smallest. So you see, in other words, just because a person has a lot of children doesn't mean that they're going to end up having a huge number of descendants, and vice versa. Marsha points out that in Parshas Vayigash, and in Parshas Vayigash, it calls him Chushim. In Parshas Pinchas, when it lists all the families, instead it calls him Shucham. So that's why the Gemara darshins his real name was Shucham, but we're darshining that he was called Chushim because he had so many tens of thousands of descendants. So therefore, we do see that the word of Nei can be used of one son. So therefore, that would answer the question over here, that when he says, I want my Nechasim to go to my sons in plural, he really means only the one. Okay, another case, another case where a man said, I want my Nechasim to go to my sons in plural. Now in this case, he had a son and he had a grandson. Rashbam says this grandson may have been the son of that one son, or he may have been the son of a different brother who died. Anyway, the question is, Koru Inshu, the Bar Bra Bra Oiloi, do people call a grandson a son or not? If he says, Bonai, my sons, Loshen Rabim, then it would mean each of them gets half the Nechasim. If not, then it means that he means only the one son, because we just said that one son can be called a Rene. It is true, Meforshim point out, that In halacha, we consider bnei bonim harem kibonim. It comes up, for example, as far as the chiyuv of a grandfather to teach Torah to his grandchildren. If the father didn't, for whatever reason, it comes up, for example, in the matter in the din of pru or ru, that a person is yotze pru or ru, even if he has a son who died, as long as he has a grandson from him, etc. The question is, loshen bnei adam. In loshen bnei adam, do people call a grandson a son? So the Gemara says, Ma Brav Ashi Omaloi Koru Inshila Ba Brav Bra. Ma Brav Ashi says they don't. And the Gemara says, Tanya Kava say, Nimab Rabashi, and in fact, we learn in Braisa, I skipped a line. Rav Chaviva Amakaru Inshi Labab Rabra. Rav Chaviva says they do. Therefore, each of these, the son and the grandson, are each going to get half the Nechasim. Mab Rabashi Amaloi Koru Inshi Labab Rabra. Mab Rabashi says they don't. Tanya Kava say, Nimab Rabashi, and we learn a Braisa like him. Hamudu Hanomi Bonim, Mutu Bibne Bonim. If a person makes a neder not to have Hana from his sons, he's allowed to have Hana from his grandsons. So we see, Nidorim also, you go according to Loshim Ne'adim, you don't go according to the definitions that we find in Halacha and other areas. So we see that as far as Loshim Ne'adim, by Nidorim, grandsons are not included in sons, so it is the same over here, so therefore it means that it just goes to his son, and then the grandson doesn't get anything. Again, we're talking about from the point of view of Matana, we're not getting into Yerusha, we're talking about he's saying as a Matana. So the bottom line, Loshim Ne'adim, we're saying, Ma'abar Ravashi says it. So grandsons are not considered sons. No, yeah. So therefore, just the son would get here. Okay. The Mishnah says, Achin Hashutvin, if you have brothers who are partners. So what we mean is, in other words, so a person passed away and his children Yarshin is his property, and they decided not to split it up yet. They're still managing it as an undivided estate. So they have kind of a unique position in Halacha. They're considered to some extent still like the one person, their father. So even though they're physically separate people, they still, they're considered like one person for various halachas. It comes aside from here where it comes up in dinim of dinim mominus. It also comes up in hilchos shkolim, and it comes up in hilchos ma'ase behema, and it comes up in a few areas in halacha, this kind of unique arrangement. Anyway, the Mishnah says, what?
I apologize. Next question on the last.
Sure.
Inyan.
Yeah.
These type of gemaras that discuss what is the meaning or intention of a word,
so you're asking what if it means? It is subject to change. It is subject to change for pastors, yeah. If in a different time people stayed, if in a different time and place people use the word vonning to mean grandchildren as well, then the pastors, it would be applied differently. The same way as, for example, Udiru in the Masechta, there was there were many parts, there were several chapters in the Masechta that talked about the details of if you sell this, what is included with that automatically. We had if you sell a house, what's included automatically, you sell a field, what's included automatically, you sell a boat, what's included automatically, the Rambam stresses with all those things, hakol k'minig ha'medina. If nowadays you sell a house and automatically such and such is included, then it's included even if the Mishnah said otherwise. We're talking about all of these are defaults if you don't have a particular minig ha'medina. Yeah, so the same thing over here with Pashas. Okay, so again, you have ha'achin ha'shutvin, shenofal echad mehem la'umnus. If one of them wound up getting an umnus, a job for the king, so he's working for the king, and now he's going to be earning a salary from that. Rashbam gives an example. For example, the government might have each family is going to provide each month is going to have one person for is going to have one family is going to be in charge of collecting the taxes from that city for a month. So they have to remit a certain amount to the king, and whatever profits they make go to them. We often find in the Gemara the tax collectors would abuse their authority a lot. In fact, the Gemara in various places talks about tax collectors are almost by default considered gazlonim, but a person can be an honest tax collector. The Gemara elsewhere tells about the father of Reb Zera, who was an example of that. So hopefully we're talking about somebody like that here. Be that as it may, so he's working now for the king. And Rashbam explains what happened was that it's machmas oviv. It's because his father used to be doing that, and so now the king or his minister said, now you'll take over what your father used to do. So then nofal la'emtza. So now all the profits he makes go to the middle, meaning in other words that all the brothers share in it equally. Because again, it's considered that they're still in place of their father because the estate has not been divided. Cholav nisrape. If he gets sick and he has to pay for medical bills nisrape mishalatzmai, that he has to pay on his own, that he's not entitled to take out of the estate. Well, so the Gemara explains sholach rovin mishmeid rabbi loy loy shonu el shacholav b'pshir. That would only be if he became sick by his own carelessness. So then the other brothers can say, why should we have to chip in for your medical bills? Aba ba'onis. But if it was ba'onis nisrap him in an emtza, then in fact he is able to pay his medical bills from the common pool. The Shonim discuss exactly what the scenarios are, when he's entitled to, when he's not entitled to, but we won't get into so much of that detail right now. Anyway, the Gemara says, Hey Kedami B'Pshia, what do we mean he's careless? And the answer is Kidd Rav Chanina. Like what Rav Chanina says, Omer Rav Chanina, Akol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Mitzinim Pachim. Everything is in Hashem's hands, except for Tzinim Pachim. We learned this in Bav Metziah as well. One explanation of Tzinim Pachim, Tzinim means cold. Pachim can either mean traps, like a Pach Nishbar, so it can mean, so then Tzinim Pachim would be just cold, that makes a person, that traps a person and makes him sick. Or the other explanation, Pachim would mean heat. So they don't need cold and heat, either which, too much cold or too much heat, can damage a person's health. So everything is in Hashem's hands except for those things. Meaning, in other words, Tosfos teaches out every other thing that happens to a person. A person is attacked by lions. A person is attacked by ganovim or whatever. All of that is min Hashemayim. But sinim pachim, he has a responsibility to guard himself. Now, Tosfos says it doesn't mean, for example, a person could, Rachman al-Fan, commit suicide by jumping into a fire or into a river or something. Obviously, he'd be able to do that, but that's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about where a person can get sick or be harmed by various things. Hashem makes them all happen, and except for Tzinim Pachem, because it's his responsibility to guard himself. Tosfos brings in this connection where Anton Ninus one time asks Rebbe, I'm going to be going on a trip. Give me a bracha, daven for me. So Rebbe says, Hashem should protect you from the cold. And then he says, what kind of a bracha is that? I'll put on an extra sweater if it's cold. So Rebbe says, fine. Then I daven for you that Hashem should protect you from the heat. Oh, Antoninus says, that's a bracha. That's a tefillah. Because it's not like they had air conditioners then, you know. So, yeah. As the pasuk says, v'ein nista mechamosa, nothing that nobody can hide from the sun's heat. Yeah. Anyway, so a person is responsible to guard himself against sinim pachim shenemar. As the pasuk says, sinim pachim v'derech ikish, sinim pachim, cold and heat, or dangerous cold, whatever, is in the way of a crooked person. Shomer nafsho, yuchakam, a person who will guard his soul will stay far away from them because a person is responsible to guard his own health. Mephoshim talk about that besides the simple meaning, it also refers to, for example, we know all over the place in Chassidus, heat and cold are metaphors for the excitement that a person has in something versus the kalkite that he has there. We know, for example, the Rebbe talks about, for example, Makas Dam and Sfardeya, that Mak Dam was meant to get rid of the inappropriate coldness that the Mitzvim had towards other course, and Sfardeya, which are cold-blooded creatures, was the other way around to get rid of the inappropriate heat and excitement they had for Tumah. So the same way over here, in other words, a person is responsible to keep charge and to watch what he himself, where he himself is standing as far as his cold and heat in Avodah. We've talked before, also I've mentioned in the Shiur over here, but also a story with the Chazon Yecheskel, Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, who was a Rav in Russia, and later on a famous Dayan in London and in Eretz Yisrael, where he was sentenced to, he was sent to Siberia, and they didn't give him proper clothing over there, so he says to the Eibishter, under such conditions, then sinim pachim is also in your hands, because I don't have the ability to guard myself against it. And sure enough, during all the time he was there, he never even had a cold. Meanwhile, other people were dropping like flies. But the Eibishter protected him with his bitachon that yes, he is gonna guard over him in such conditions as well. Yonye Mashiach Golach of Zayin Nissen. One particular mitzvah that has a special segula to bring the geula closer is tzedakah, as we learned earlier in this mesechta. Gedolah tzedakah shema kadavas tzedakah. Therefore, we understand that we have to add more and more tzedakah. Best would be would be taken from yad. Now, especially any tonu yodei adma, nobody knows what it is. What's the last thing that has to be done? Maybe the last thing that's missing to bring the geula is giving a few coins to tzedakah. As Rambam famously says, it's psakim alocha that a person always has to consider himself and the whole world chetzi zaka v'chetzi chayim, and he does one mitzvah and he's machriya as kol ha'olam kaf chus v'goram lov lahem true of atzlo. That's all. Continuing with the halachas of tzitzis, we were in the middle of talking about the various cases that we talked about, cases where a person steals tzitzis threads or steals wool. What are the dinim of that? So now, further in this topic, if a person bows to an animal, and, you know, I don't know that you'd find that very much in North America, but if you ever visit India, you're very likely to find such a thing. Anyway, the wool of such an animal would be possible for tzitzis. Now, the animal itself is not osur b'hana. The halacha is that an animal or anything, it's called that there's no tfisas yad adam. There's no human involvement in the creation of this thing, and therefore it doesn't become osur in and of itself. Same way, for example, let's say you have in some places, the goyim worship mountains. The mountains are not osur b'hanah because of it. Nevertheless, it's still, so therefore it would be mutter ahead yet, but to use it for a mitzvah, it would be something repulsive to Hashem, mos the gavoya. The same way, as such an animal is possible to bring as a korban. So the same way the wool on it is possible for tzitzis. You could say when you make the tzitzis, you're changing the wool. Nevertheless, it still has the same appearance, it's still recognizable as wool. On the other hand, though, if people are bowing to flax that's growing, that you would be allowed to make tzitzis with, subject to what we learned before about making tzitzis of linen anyhow, which is a whole other matter, but whatever. If you're making linen tzitzis, then that's different. There it doesn't become osur, even the gavaya, because it's so completely changed. When it grows as stalks of flax, it's just like stalks, it's like wooden stalks, and now it becomes threads, so therefore the original appearance of it is completely gone, and therefore it wouldn't be, so the thing wouldn't even be osur le gavaya. Getting back now to somewhat more practical day-to-day dinning. You make the hole for the tzitzis, it should be no more than 3 gudlim from the edge of the garment. A gudl, we learned before, according to Rav Avraham Chaim Noah, is about 3/4 of an inch, so this would be about two and a quarter inches, approximately. 2 2 and 5/16 inches, or whatever Chaim Noah explains in one of his Sfarim. It shouldn't be further away from the corner than that, because it's supposed to be ala konof. So if it's more than 3 gudlim away, then it's considered part of the actual beged. If you make the hole higher than that, then let's say, for example, you know, you make the tzitzis, sometimes you stretch out the hole. If you have one hole, if you have 2 holes, you can't really stretch out the holes very much. But let's say when you have on Talis Gadol, where you have one hole, if let's say you might stretch out the hole, and there you're going to, or crease the garment or whatever to bring it within 3 etzbot, within 3 gudlim, that still won't work. It has to be that to begin with, the hole is within 3 gudlim of the edges. Now, on the same way, for example, you put the tzitzis in, and then afterwards you cut the same way, if you cut the hole to make it larger, then it's also possible, again, you're back to task of Lehman Osteri, as we learned before. I say, you usually buy ready-made tzitzis, but in case you decide to roll your own, then you need to know these details.